Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Thursday, brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street at Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to the great Purdy family, Purdy Insurance, Adam Purdy, Craig Purdy, Steve Engel. They were in my group yesterday. Oh, I was a part of their group, actually, more accurately phrased. I want to thank Jonathan at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club Pro Shop. He was terrific yesterday. Thank you, Jonathan. It's also great to see Sue there, who does a great job on the staff at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Bonnie Wasmer from the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA and the entire Y staff. I want to thank Tom and Liz Mertz. Not only for everything that happened yesterday, but also for being the absolute perfect hosts at the at Penn's Tavern on Tuesday night. And Sean, of course, did yeoman work to make all that happen on Tuesday. Yeoman work. And also Keith Conlin, Trey Bauer, Shane Conlin, Tim Sweeney, Christian Hackenberg, and Adam Brenneman for being there yesterday as well. Really, it really was a spectacular 2 days with the drama of the rock slide, which I thought was really, really, really neat. All right. A good Facebook friend of the show, Rob Cardillo, suggested something that I completely agree with. He wants the play-by-play call of the day to be the St. Louis Blues going to the Western Conference Final.
Double overtime here in Game 7. If you're just tuning in or you're wondering what you're listening to tonight, Blues and Stars tied 1-1, done in the first, Zuccarello in the first, those are the goal scorers. Blues have the puck, Thomas off the wall, shoots, and it's in! They score! It's the St. Louisans! Pat Maroon! Bring out the Zamboni! Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he sends them to the conference finals! A 2-1 win in double overtime over the Dallas Stars. Pat Maroon on May 7th, Game 7. He's number 7, and it's the Tall Man, Pat Maroon, the hero. He grew up in Oakville, and this is what he's dreamt about ever since playing floor hockey in his garage. A terrific face-off win by Tyler Bozak. Robert Thomas takes it, drags it, makes an incredible, incredible one-on-one move, throws it at the net. Ben Bishop gets a piece. It's sitting right behind them, and the big rig cleans up the trash, and he sends the Blues off to the Western Conference Final.
And they'll get the San Jose Sharks, who in 7 beat the Colorado Avalanche. Avs made a great run in the third period last night, came up just short. San Jose, the Sharks, and the Blues in the Western Conference Final. Carolina and the Bruins, the Hartford Whalers and the Boston Bruins are in the Eastern Conference Final. Sorry, I can't look at the legitimacy of the Carolina Hurricanes. I just can't. Stubborn New England guy. All right. Let's, by the way, Rob, great suggestion. Appreciate that very much. Hope you enjoyed it, just like we did. All right, let's bring in Mark Brennan into the Sunbury Motors studio. Marco, great to have you with us, as always.
Let's start with the money that's allocated for Lash Building and Haluba Hall, for example. They've been doing renovations on the main level of Lash. Now it'll be the upper level plus Haluba Hall. What were your thoughts on the allocation of money in those two projects?
I was at one of the Penn State prospect camps a couple years ago, and I never realized this. You probably did because you're much more astute than I am. But I was standing on the outdoor field up near Haluba Hall,
right?
And James Franklin was there with me, and we were just BSing about it. I don't even know what we were talking about. And somehow it was like we started talking about the outdoor field. And he said, do you realize that far corner Is it 6 feet? It's something ridiculous.
Yes, yeah.
It's the when you're by Haluba, and if you look down toward the mm-hmm. if, for people who haven't been there, it's a big outdoor field, and then there's a turf field at the far other end.
Right.
As you look from Haluba down toward whatever that road is, like down by University Drive, mm-hmm. that's at, I think he said 6 feet. It may have been
that's
more.
Right.
It drops off that much.
Yes, it does.
So you're talking about, now that's well over 100 yards.
Yes.
But think about practicing on a field that drops that much. So that's right. something that's been needed. I don't know what they were thinking when they initially did that.
This is not an initial thing. Yeah. That was actually redone to get it to be that way. I don't think people realize, I guess a lot of people wouldn't realize this, obviously. But that the two grass fields used to then at the end dramatically drop, and I mean I'm talking like a 3 foot drop
okay.
into the artificial field.
Right.
Well, then they went through and they finally leveled it out, so it at least appears it is all on one level, but it still does go downhill.
Right.
Now here's the next part, Haluba Hall. Now, because Haluba Hall is now 100 yards
lengthwise,
you know, lengthwise,
yeah,
instead of 260-yard widths, okay, it was a little more apparent when it was the 260-yard widths because you were practicing in those directions.
Right.
If you actually level out Haluba Hall and just, okay, we're just going to take the one end and level it out, half the door would be covered at the right end. People don't realize.
Yeah, and that's so.
This is something, of course, I've been in there a thousand times,
right.
So I know this.
But so think about practicing on that every day.
Yeah,
and how you have to adjust for that. So that, you know, to me, that's been long coming, and obviously the stuff inside of Lash Building. Listen, you know, I get that people would look at this, you know, with all respect to you, as keeping up with the Joneses. But in college football, sorry.
I mean, let's face it, it's been happening for a long time.
No. Well, hey, think back in the day when we had, you know, Steve Jones, Kim Jones, yeah. Dave Jones, Ryan yeah. Jones. Now we have Ben Jones. We have all you. So on this beat, you have to keep up with the Joneses. But in all seriousness, when it comes to recruiting, in my opinion, these renovations should have been undertaken much sooner
yes.
than they were.
That's right.
I think under Joe and whatever you want to say, listen, I think things got outdated in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. And these are things that you need to be able to recruit on par with other top programs. And I think the key is to not spend money frivolously. So I don't think you want to see miniature golf. I don't think you want to see that sort of
right.
stuff.
Right, yeah, the Clemson
done already,
stuff that they've done.
The,
yeah.
the nutrition bar, I mean...
Yeah.
Listen, you've been around the program way longer than I have, but you can see already something. It seems relatively as simple as the nutrition bar.
Right.
You look at the difference in the athletes now than from like maybe 10 years ago, and that's not to say that there weren't great athletes,
right.
but across the board, they just all look like they're fitter, probably eating better, you know, that sort of thing. And I think a lot of that comes from that. So to keep on improving Lash Building, I think it's very important to what they need to do
yeah.
recruiting-wise.
Let's get to the upper level. This is, would be offices and meeting
right.
rooms as to what they're doing. I'm going to guess you probably haven't been in the coaches' meeting rooms.
Yeah.
Have you been in there?
I've not spent, like, a lot of time
yeah.
in there. I've walked by, and they haven't said, hey, Mark, come on in. We need help with the game plan for Rutgers this week.
Right.
Like they do with Steve.
That explains a couple of calls on third down. It's like we shouldn't have taken Steve's suggestion. But they need to be redone.
Yeah.
It's a 20-year-old building. I mean, it's like Haluba Hall's a 33-year-old building, right? Lash Building's a 20-year-old building. You have to do something with it. It's not a question of keeping up with Clemson or Alabama, even though you're trying to. There is a reality, though, to it.
Right.
This is not the youngest building going.
Sure. I mean, technology, you know, you name it. But there is an element of keeping up, and we've been to some other places.
Yes.
You know, for instance, I've been to the New York Jets practice facility several times for Nike camps, and it's basically Haluba Hall with a bunch of cool stuff attached to it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I've been in Alabama because I was down there
yeah.
in December.
And where were we? Yeah, well, actually, yeah, at Alabama, even when I was there almost 10 years ago
right.
now, just the, you know, And you look around the Big Ten and what everybody else is doing. You just have to do. And I think the most important part of it all is that it's not coming from athletic department money, right?
Right.
This is stuff that they are generating the money to. And let's face it, you know, whether you agree or disagree with the amount of money that's being poured into college football, at the end of the day, Penn State football is footing the bill for the vast majority of this athletic department. And if you're not spending money to make money, it's going to impact the rest of the athletic department. See, so there's a trickle-down effect to this.
This is investment time. This is what you're trying to do. You're trying to invest. It's not just investing. Hey, we're investing in football. Well, actually, in reality, you're investing in the whole thing because you're taking your money maker and you're putting money into it.
Right. Yeah, and if football isn't making money, and that's why I've long argued, and this is probably a debate for another show, that, you know, I think they have to be really intelligent about how much money they put into men's hoops, because that's the only other legitimate moneymaker.
They're putting money into it with the new locker rooms and some other, and they put it into the film room. So they've actually put money into it or putting more into it.
I think if you were to compare the amount of money that's put into men's hoops against other Big Ten teams, I think they have to maybe step it up. Just, you know, I don't have the numbers here in front of me, but in terms of football, you know, I think that's top of the hill. That's where a lot of the money has to go, because that's going to end up generating money. And listen, we need only look at men's lacrosse to see, when you invest money in these programs, the impact that it makes. Right. I'm not here to say that.
Or maybe, men's ice hockey.
Yeah. Well, obviously, hockey goes without saying, but I think with lacrosse, they went how long with never winning a postseason game, with never, you know, winning a Big Ten title. Not that that was that long, because the conference hasn't been around. But you can't tell me that that doesn't have something to do with the new facility and how that helped them recruit.
Yeah, and they've been able to recruit really well, and it's going to get better because now that facility is finished.
Right.
You know, and Ken.
You're not selling a painting.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ken Panzer was able to make that donation. I mean, it really helped. They've done a good job of engaging their alumni.
How good do they have to feel about themselves, by the way? You know, you end up putting all this money into this.
Phenomenal.
And all of a sudden it pays off like that. And I was actually, you know, I have to admit, I don't watch a ton of lacrosse, and I don't know the sport real well. But in watching that championship, I will end up watching the second half of the championship match. You know, you could tell there's an energy and something to that program now that probably wasn't there. They obviously have the right coach. They've done a good job there. And now you have a great facility, and I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah, and they're going to host at noon on Sunday. Noon on Sunday they will host. It's either, what, Marist or UMBC. They had to play in game on Wednesday. So that's, and they're the number one overall seed in the tournament, and Jeff Tambroni has done a great job. So at this time of the year, what do you do?
I just hang out and not do much. No, there's a ton of, for our site, there's a ton of prospect camps going on at different places. You know, Baltimore a couple weeks ago. This week was D.C. A week ago was Big 33 practice up here, which was pretty fun. Had a chance to talk to Joey Porter Jr., which was interesting. I mean, a kid had a great story. There's always the beauty of football being 24/7, 365. Is that there's always something to be done. Yeah. And it's really difficult to find a time to take vacation and do that sort of stuff, because there's always something going on. And I'm also lucky, though, that my daughter's playing softball, so I'm keeping up with that. But no, there's always recruiting stuff going on. The transfer portal, as difficult as that's been for college football programs, listen, as a news outlet, it's been a bonus for us.
Oh,
I hate to say that, but it's it's true. I mean, I actually did a radio show in Champaign this morning. I didn't drive there. I was actually over the phone talking about Tommy Stevens, because Tommy, obviously, Illinois is one of the schools that he was looking at. So there's always news. The facility stuff, there's always stuff going on, especially now. You know, back in the day, you would get through the end of spring practice and there'd be nothing going on for weeks or for months. And now it's a whole different ball game. Coming up later this month and early next month are the Penn State prospect camps. Right. So that's always fun to cover. So there's always something to do.
Yeah, and there certainly is. And the two kids, I'll tell you a quick story. And I think I mentioned this on the show the other day. Pete Rohr, we were at the State College Quarterback Club board meeting on Thursday night. And he says, "Oh, what about Bolton?" And he says, "Well, you know." Then he started asking me about Stevens. I'm like, "Well, you know." He goes, "Oh, that's..." He says, "Stevens gone?" I said,
I said, well, they got Sean Clifford. He goes, no, I was talking about Lamar. I said, oh. I said, I got all these Stevens problems. It's like, Pete, I need a first name.
Well, I told another funny story that I was at the state high softball and baseball fields are right next to each other the other day, and I show up with my Sixers hat on because it was before game three.
Right.
And a parent had a kid on both teams, the softball and baseball team, and he said to me, who do you think is going to win? I said, which game? He said, Sixers-Raptors. I said, oh, I thought you meant one of the baseball or softball games. So, yeah, it's fun. It's a fun time to be in Happy Valley. This is just a great time of year, obviously. And from a Penn State sports perspective, as you said, you know, the transfer portal, camps, all that stuff.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Tommy Stevens. I don't know how much you guys have discussed that, but...
I think we've discussed it a fair amount. I mean, it sounds like Illinois, Miami of Ohio, Mississippi State are the visit places. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and I just have to believe, given how much he knows the system,
right,
Mississippi State would seem to make the most sense. I can't imagine going into...
They had an heir apparent to Nick Fitzgerald who did not exactly... light up the spring,
right,
and that'll play into it. But then there's Sean Clifford. Well, he's still very much here in the times, and I don't mean games, but in the limited times you've seen him practice. What have you thought of him?
The one thing that is going to stand out to everybody is he is far more mobile than you.
You better believe it.
He's not Tommy Stevens mobile.
No.
I don't want to give a false impression here, but he can really move with the ball. And, you know, listen, his accuracy, we saw it last year. If not for the drop by Tompkins in the bowl game, he would be looking at what, you know, 6 of 8 or something ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, so...
Six of seven, I think.
Yeah, he could definitely... he's definitely accurate. I think the key thing with Sean Clifford, dating back to his high school days, keeping him healthy.
Right.
He's had a tendency to be bumped up, and that's where I think if he's healthy, you're fine. And I think Will Levis is going to be a really good quarterback. Fact that he's never taken a snap,
sure,
that's the one thing where you lose Tommy Stevens where you're a little bit worried is the depth part of it. And then you get below that with the two true freshmen. Now, I will say this. It was a blessing that both of those kids, Roberson and Johnson, were able to get in here for spring ball.
Yep.
Because otherwise they would be showing up in the, you know, just in terms of talking to the coaches, their heads were kind of on a swivel. In spring, because all this stuff is happening. Well, now all of a sudden, one of them is going to be the third teamer, if not maybe some combination of both of them. You're going to go into summer and then preseason camp, having pocketed all of those spring practice reps. Right. So that, I think, was a bonus for them. I don't mean to say that it was a bonus that Tommy was bumped up, because I don't wish that on anybody. But the fact that he was ended up being a silver lining, that Clifford got the number one snaps. Yeah. Levis got some one snaps and most of the two snaps.
Yeah, he got one's the one day Clipper
right.
was sick. Yeah.
But so, you know what? That's a set of one snaps,
sure.
You know what
yep.
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other kids got the three snaps. So that may not seem like a big deal, but that's going to pay dividends as they move forward.
What do you think of Bolton entering the transfer portal?
Yeah, whenever I see someone's dad quoted after these things, it's like,
usually
okay,
that's kind of
explaining it.
That usually opens the door.
Listen, I don't even want to compare that to Tommy Stevens, because I get what Tommy was thinking about. You know, he sees his NFL career here.
Well, he's a fifth-year guy.
Right, he's graduated. For Rasir, I don't know. You're going to have to sit out a year. You're not
going to.
After what his dad was quoted as saying, how can you petition for hardship when it was basically the dad saying, I mean, he was essentially saying they didn't get along, right? I mean, that's what I was reading into it. So I don't know that you're,
I don't really
you're
know
pretty
what
much,
you're saying.
Yeah, you pretty much ruled out any sort of hardship or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, these kids have the right to do what they want to do, but that one was a little bit of a head scratcher to me.
And I talked briefly with Miles Dredd last week, and he was moving some mattress out. He was at the Jordan Center, and I said, what are you going to do in the first semester? It's, you know, a six-week session. He's taking a class. You know, so they're all here working out. And you know, people ask those questions. Well, what about, you know, he's here. He'll be starting class a week from today.
Well, and I don't know what Mike Watkins could have done, but I think the fact that he's coming back, number one, it's the best thing for him. That's what I think you have to look at
overall. I
think
everybody's said that, is that, look, this is like a human, this is a human being story here. It's not a basketball story. He can get his degree, I think, as early as August if he wants. And then, you know, he can decide August or December. He gets that degree.
Right. But you really wonder with some of the issues that he's had, you know, what else was he going to do? Because given the way last season went for him, the NBA wasn't going to happen now.
Sure, of course.
And then do you want a kid going overseas? I mean, he has to get everything in line personally for himself.
On an everyday basis,
right,
he does.
Before you worry about trying to play overseas or whatever.
Yep.
So I think for him, it's the best thing, and I think it ends up help. The residual of that is it's going to help the program with him coming back.
I think starting this season, this upcoming season, a year and a half removed from being hurt, then I think changes some dynamics for him because he was trying to play through last year, being only a half year removed from it. I think that, you know, I think that's going to be a big factor.
And hopefully he's an older kid now. I mean, he's going to be 24, I think, in a couple months.
Yeah.
You know, the key with him is going to be, are you mature enough off the floor?
Yeah.
Are you mature enough when you go downtown with your friends? Are you mature enough, you know, with whatever? And this is real life now for Mike Watkins. I mean, he's gotten every opportunity. I give Pat a lot of credit for sticking with him, for never bailing out on him.
Mm-hmm.
But you wonder how many opportunities he has left, and I just hope he makes the most of this situation.
The next 10 months set the tone, I think, for the rest of Mike's life.
Right. And the other part of it is he could be a pro player.
He could make
a lot of money in now. Right. Whether is that the NBA, is that Europe, is it whatever? But Steve, how many guys do we know who played at Penn State, went to Europe, set themselves up for life?
Yeah.
Based on what they were able to do. Tyler Smith, Pete Lisicki, DeRon Hayes,
Glenn Secunda,
Tom Hovas, Fogel.
Yeah.
I mean, all these guys who were able to do that.
Lisicki forever played out over there.
Yeah, so that's my point is that. So even if the NBA isn't in his future, and it could be, but even if it's not, he has the opportunity to set himself up and, you know, take advantage of that. Here's, you know, knock on wood, hopefully he takes advantage of this year and does what he needs to do.
How many more softball games do you have left here?
Handful. I don't even know. It's hard. There's three this week.
Three this week.
And then a doubleheader on Saturday. So the beauty of this I'm not sure when your kids were you in the mid-pen when your kids were coming up through?
No.
Think about going and covering and watching a game at Chambersburg in the middle of the week, like on a Tuesday, and then having to drive home two hours and 20 minutes away, Carlisle.
Well, I remember going out and my son playing at a football game of Punxsutawney. So, I mean, I did that.
But it's every single game is like an hour and a half. The closest is Mifflin County.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, you know, you got Central Dauphin we have this week.
Yeah.
Camp Hill we've had. We've had Carlisle. It's just one trip after another. But it's fun. Doing what I do, working from home, Stacy and I are able to drive and go see most of the games, which is cool because not a lot of parents can, and it's good to have at least some representation of the parents there. It's us and somebody's grandma and grandpa come, and it's fun.
Yeah, it was much easier back for me because it was Lock Haven, Williamsport, Hollidaysburg, Lewistown, Altoona. Then the furthest trips were Cedar Cliff, down by obviously Camp Hill, Punxsutawney in Indiana. Yeah, so that's what it used to be,
and now it's different.
Now it's completely different. It's, you know.
So as tough as it is for the football players, think about like for baseball, softball, all these things when you're going in the middle of the week. But you know what? It's a good conference. It's good competition.
And if anybody needs an update on the project at Potter's Mills, he can give it to you.
Yeah, absolutely. there have been a few profanities uttered while driving. You know, you're like cruising along, and you get to the top of that one kind of hill that before it goes down to the dip before you go up.
Yep.
And you can see all the traffic backed up. It's and you know what? There's no end around.
I know there isn't.
Yeah, I guess you could go 45, but ends up being so. Yeah.
No.
This is the last week of it.
Thanks.
Yep, thanks for having me, guys.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Chris Wheeler on the show tomorrow on the passing of David Montgomery. We'll have a writer for the Washington Post tomorrow on the conclusion of the college basketball trial. Merle Code and Christian Dawkins were found guilty. We'll talk about that and the implications of the trial. And then the King will be on. Sue from the Susquehanna Valley Country Club is the one that first nicknamed him the King. So let's make sure people understand that. All right. Let's talk some football now and bring in Neil Coulong. You know, it may seem like I'm in Barbados. Where are you? Guam? Where?
I bet my weather's nicer than yours.
I got to give you credit, Neil. You know, you picked the best locations.
I don't know where that came from. Randomly off the top of my head. Barbados. Why not?
Barbados, Guam. No, I'm in Sealands Grove. All right, so that's where I am today. All right, Neil. So here we are in this alleged dead period right now. How would you, let's start with this. It is the 100th year, 100th season of NFL football, the 100th season. In your opinion, what is the state of the league right now?
I think if we were to describe it, I'd probably say in flux, simply because I really think the game itself is at a transition point. It really doesn't know where it's going to be in the future. And how I think it has a good idea of how it got to the position that it's in. And what's weighing over it clearly is the issue with head trauma, concussions, youth numbers in decline. All of those are going to impact the sport in its future. We're not sure where it's going to be in the next generation. There are a lot of parents that don't want their kids to play football. There's a lot of information that's out there that, it would at the very least, kind of maybe startle a parent or kind of snap them back to their senses if they didn't really think about it before. I think we're even past that point. So you're looking at a generation of American athletes who might be playing something else, and you're not sure what the game is going to look like without, one, top-level athletes, two, with even more regulation, which is going to happen at some point. It's not as if the numbers are declining to a point where anybody's going to feel comfortable about it. After a while, the NFL's popularity is going to start to wane because, in my opinion, this generation that it really developed its sense of loyalty to the NFL, the passion for the NFL, they're getting older and older. That generation's grandkids aren't going to play as much football. How much interest are they going to have? I would say this, too. On top of all of it, I think we saw something of a phenomenon in terms of interest, maybe not in ratings. I won't get into the ratings and attendance piece of it as much because I think there are various reasons for that. But it felt to me, and we both work in this business, we talk to a lot of people about football, it felt to me like there was a much less enthusiastic sense of the NFL when Peyton Manning retired. what's going to happen when Tom Brady retires? You know, who's picking up the mantle of these great champions to develop these great, really, quarterback battles in the NFL? I think what we're seeing is the older era, a guy like Peyton, a guy like Brady, their teams were more complete not even all that long ago. They played in the non-regulated era of the NFL, and I think fans got into it more at that point. Everyone else now, it feels like a track meet. You know, first one to 45 wins, and quarterbacks are going to be getting heaps and heaps of praise for the accomplishments that they make. But not even looking back to three generations ago, looking back just to a decade ago, we saw Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, these you know, probably the two most accomplished quarterbacks in the history of the game. We saw them doing battle against each other in a non-regulated environment. I think this generation is going to remember that. We're not going to give as much credence, even to Aaron Rodgers, perhaps, but to Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, whoever. A lot of quarterbacks were having a ton of success. Historically, they're way above and beyond their peers. I don't think we're going to credit them as much. So the long-tell story of the NFL is going to be that the rise of statistical achievement in an effort to mask regulation, head injuries, head trauma, and issues that the game itself is just isn't going to ever be able to get past. We're not going to remember the game the same way long term, and I'm not sure that's going to be a positive thing in 20 years.
You would think at 16 to 17 billion a year with the TV contracts that they have, the radio contracts, now the internet contracts they have, that the NFL would be the absolute bastion of stability. Yet Major League Baseball, the last team that moved happened to be the Montreal Expos to Washington to be the Nationals. The last NBA team to move was Seattle to Oklahoma City. Kevin Durant played his rookie year as the Seattle Supersonic. Then they moved to Oklahoma City. In the NHL, I think it was the Carolina Hurricanes were the last ones, the Hartford Whalers to the Carolina Hurricanes. The NFL has now had the Raiders dallying around in Oakland. Now they're going to go to Las Vegas. The Chargers leaving San Diego for a soccer stadium in Los Angeles. Then the Rams, I think everyone, the Rams situation from St. Louis to Los Angeles, older fans were like, hey, fine, the Rams are back in Los Angeles. But has that kind of movement changed perceptions about the NFL because they're the ones that are moving and abandoning places?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, and I would say this. I hear what you're getting at, but I think really the reasons behind those teams moving are in step with the mistrust that the average fan now has with the NFL, and in a huge degree, it's not even the teams moving. It's Minneapolis that basically had Roger Goodell come in and strong-arm state politicians to get a stadium built. And in exchange, they gave him a Super Bowl on a 12-degree day in downtown Minneapolis.
And remember what the threat was. I'll say this. Remember what was the threat in most of these. When the Los Angeles market was open, the NFL used that chip over and over and over again.
Yep, that's the point that I was going to make. They don't have that anymore. So I think with other sports, I'm not sure they quite had that kind of a market available. Clearly, we saw, you know, the defection from Canada to the southern U.S. when it comes to the NHL and the Wayne Gretzky era and beyond. We see plenty of that. Baseball, I think pretty much everyone is set where they are. I'm not sure anyone either wants a baseball team or wants to get rid of a baseball team. They're going to be stable for however long. The NBA, I think you're going to see the same type of thing with Seattle. I think they're going to kind of dangle the carrot a little bit for a few teams that are struggling probably a lot more than the St. Louis Rams were, certainly more than the Vikings were when they were playing at the Metrodome. The NFL, though, they employed a bully's mentality when it came to demanding public dollars for these stadiums. And with that, it annoys the tax base. I mean, here in Pittsburgh, if you go to a Pirates game, you're paying for all the stadiums in the area. You go out of town. I mean, I went to Comerica Park in Detroit. I'm not sure if it's still called that or not, but to a Tigers game, a work trip. And I ended up with a rental car and a ticket to the game. I think I ended up paying like an additional $13 in tax on top of everything. And people notice that kind of thing. Certainly the voters do. The majority in Minneapolis was not in favor of a new stadium. They wanted the Vikings to stay, but not at the deal that the politicians had hammered out. And many representatives went against their constituency to get that deal done. So the NFL, you're right, doesn't really have that leveraging chip anymore. Now they have two teams in LA, and most people would argue that, you know, do they even need that second team? I don't think anybody wants that second team. They might be the AFC champions and the least popular team in football.
Right.
The NFL can't possibly expand. We've seen that. We've talked about it in this program that they're at the, you know, the absolute bottom of the barrel when it comes to talent. Football is a really hard game to develop in a short amount of time. They can't do anything else. 32 teams is where they're going to be. But yeah, I mean, you know, what's going to happen again? That second generation now. The newer stadiums that perhaps were approved a little bit more by the public are getting older. What are they going to do at that point? Get more public money? I don't think that's going to work a second time.
No.
You know, you put all that together. I'm not entirely sure where the NFL is going to go with all this.
Yeah, I'll do a quick addendum. I think the Atlanta Thrashers became the Winnipeg Jets. Okay, so and then the Seattle part. How did Sacramento get a new arena for the Kings? Because they were going to move to Seattle.
Because they were going to go to Seattle, yeah. It was exactly
and that.
That deal came out of nowhere. You know, they didn't even have anything set up, and all of a sudden they did. And Sacramento didn't want that. They barely attend Kings games. They're the least popular team in the NBA by a substantial margin. They haven't been successful at all, but Seattle is dying to have a team because at one point the NBA kind of, you know, shafted them out of the team. So you look at it, a lot of this is revenge more than anything. It's not even about the teams.
I was at a speaking engagement on Friday in Elizabethtown, and I was asked about tackling, and the question was about Penn State tackling. And I said to them, I said, usually it takes by, you know, first couple of games because you don't really tackle a lot. And I pointed out the NFL. If anybody ever went to an NFL training camp, which you have, Neil, they don't tackle. Because the NFLPA is in agreement with them that you don't tackle in practice.
Yeah, they really, the new CBA put an end to a lot of the contact in camp. I've been 2 feet away from backs on backers. There's definitely some aggression there. Live scrimmages, they get into it a little bit, but you do not see them in tackling drills. And I'll say this, one interesting anecdote that I had from back in the day when Mike Munchak was the offensive line coach, you never saw them doing drills against defensive linemen live very often, unless it was really more of a defensive lineman type of drill. They practiced on air for the most part. Munchak really shied away from the physical contact piece of it and stressed the technical side of it. And whether it was air, whether it was just, you know, positioning your hands against the backup lineman, they weren't going full speed often. Now, I hadn't been to a camp in the pre, you know, this current CBA days, but from what I saw, you're always under the impression there was a lot more contact than there was. And from what I've heard from colleagues around the league, the Steelers had a lot more contact than a lot of them did. You know, they were aiming more for conditioning, and I think that's really where the game is going. It's they don't know how to tackle as well as they used to because they don't work on it as often. I think that's a statement most people will agree with, especially if you go back and watch you know, tape from the 80s. If those guys could do anything, it was tackle. They couldn't celebrate end zone dances, but they could certainly tackle. They knew how to wrap up. They were drilled in the fundamental of that. But by and large, the physicality in the game is going away because of multiple reasons. And, you know, players wanting to be able to survive the season, I think, is definitely one of them, and that's a collective bargained right that they fought for, and I would imagine will continue to fight for in the next CBA.
Well, in college, in the college game, I think almost everybody would agree that the single worst defensive entity in college football belongs in the Big 12. The Big 12 allows contact, Neil, twice a week. The second one's the game.
I'm not joking
about that. They allow 2 days of contact a week. The second one's the game.
Wow. And look at the result, you know. And at the same time, in the conference, playing for national championships, putting two Heisman Trophy winners number one overall in the NFL.
Yeah.
I don't think they mind a whole lot. So maybe that's a model. You know, Cliff Kingsbury gets a job out of nowhere, and in many ways, one that he hasn't earned in comparison to a lot of guys that don't have NFL head coaching jobs. I think that all spells in line. I think that's really what they want. 45, 42, fewer injuries. If their injuries have them be, you know, ACL tears, if they have to be, just not concussions. Whatever they can do to get past that stigma, now they're going to. And I'm not sure that's a good thing.
That's what they've wanted to do. I think they've tried to reduce that amount because, you know, the biggest one is, look, you're trying to stay away from any head contact. So they tried to stay away from it. And I noticed both the Heisman Trophy winners out of the Big 12 back-to-back happened to be offensive players. So,
exactly. Go figure.
Neil, enjoy Guam.
I'm going to. It's gorgeous. Love it here. I might just stay.
I just want to tell you, Barbados is incredible.
All right, sure, you know, we're going to swap next year, and we'll compare notes after it.
All right, that'll be fine. Then the year after, we'll compare notes on the air, and then we'll see which one's the better one.
Make this a whole thing. You know, it's easy for us to do things like that.
Especially the way we do it. All right. Neil, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks. You guys have a good day.
I think the suit is a timeshare in both. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, fun show today with Mark Brennan, Neil Coulon, and the surprising look at bowl ratings with the expansion to 43 bowl games coming up. 43. People are like, who watches? Well, it turns out that a lot of people watch.
Yeah, we'll be watching.
Again, it turned out that, what did I say? I ended up watching 17 out of 40. Does that sound right? Yeah, I didn't watch every minute of every game of those 17, but I watched the ones I said yes to are the ones where I didn't just like fly by and go keep on going. I sat there and watched it a little bit. Some longer than others, obviously. But I was in a situation this year where on the opening day, I was in Atlantic City. I had to drive back, so I missed the opening day of the bowl games. It's fine. There wasn't anything consequential anyway. You know, then I had a game at Duquesne right after that. So that means you got to travel down on a Tuesday night. I think that Gasparilla, I guess I watched 16. The Gasparilla ball, I was traveling on that. I think I watched it having dinner and we were in a bar. And then I flew from there right to Tuscaloosa and then did the game in Alabama on that Friday night that came back. Well, once the holiday was over with at Christmas time, I had Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday completely off. And then a game on Saturday. So I had one of those times where I had free time. And I sat there and said, hey, it's pretty good to me. I'll watch some of this for a while. I think a lot of people do that. They have free time, so they watch.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.